The groping after truth which has been characteristic of the progressive spirit in every age has been but the same story, different, indeed, in detail, but identical in issue. As with the blinded eye of sense, so with the spirit that gropes blindly to the light. The mazes of superstition bewilder it, the mists of human ignorance close around it. It staggers and wanders on its devious way, now here, now there, now cast down to earth and trodden underfoot by the adversaries, but rising anon, and with outstretched arms struggling onwards still. Those wanderings seem to you similar, and when confined within the limits of a single sect they are indeed alike, but to spirit gaze they have very many points of difference. The struggling spirits who in all ages have been groping their way through the maze of human opinion to the fount of light have pushed their way through tortuous paths which bear only a superficial similarity to us the theological opinions which have charactered certain sets of men called churches are not so identical as you think. We see the inner points of divergence, and we know that no two spirits yet created were precisely identical views of the unknown never presented. They have framed for themselves ideas more or less like those of other spirits, but never identical with them. It is only when the veil is removed that the fog lifts, the speculations die with the body of earth, the opinions shift aside, and the purged eye sees what it has dimly pictured, and corrects by the quickened senses the impressions of earth. Then it sees how the germ of truth is at the base, helped in some to progress by a receptive mind and a clearer spiritual vision, hampered and clogged in others by a cramped intelligence and a debased earth body. But in all cases of yearning souls thirsting for true knowledge of God and of their destiny, the opinions of earth rapidly fade, and the spirit sees how baseless and unreal they were. It is only when there is no desire for truth that error is permanent. So you see, friend, that truth is the exclusive heritage of no man, of no sect. It may and does underlie the philosophy of Athenodorus, as he yearned after the refining of the spirit and the subjection of the flesh in ancient Rome. It was as really existent in the groping after union with his master which enabled Hippolytus to endure loss of earthly existence in sure anticipation of a real life, even though he only dimly saw its characteristics. The self-same seeking after truth elevated and ennobled Plotinus, and raised him, even in earth life, above and beyond the earth sphere. It dwelt in the breast of Algatesily, in spite of the errors by which it was dimmed. It the same blessed germ of divine truth lightened the speculations of Alessandro Aquilini, and gave force and reality to the burning words which fell from his lips. The same pure jewel shines now in one and all of them. It is the common heritage which enables them to be banded together in a common work and for a common end the purifying of that deposit of the truth which man has from his God, and the ennobling and elevating of man's destiny by the outpouring of more spiritual views of God and of the destiny of spirit. To them their earth opinions are of little moment now. They have vanished long ago, and have left behind them no trace of the prejudice which clouded the soul on earth and hampered its progress. They have died and are buried, and over their grave no tear of sorrow is dropped. No resurrection awaits them, they are forever done with, but the jewel which they once enshrined shines with ever-increasing luster, and is imperishable and eternal. In its illuminating influences, in the aspirations which its presence inspires, lies the mysterious bond of sympathy which is powerful to unite in one work spirits who, in earth life, were so apparently divergent in opinion. This may serve to suggest for your consideration reasons why it may not be so strange as it now seems to you, that we should be now banded together for a common object, consecrated to a common work by one earnest desire to spread abroad the knowledge of a higher and purer religion, through an instrument chosen by us for special indications of fitness, of which we are the best judges. We are confident that continued thought will lead you to recognize the reasonableness of what we say. For definite proof you must be content to wait until you, too, have rent the veil, and stand with unclouded eye in our company. The most we hope for now is the gradual establishment of conviction. We desire that you should apply to us the same law by which the Master judged, the divine law of judging others as you would yourself be judged. This was at page 70. Section 11. You err in supposing that there has ever been any discrepancy in our teaching to you. Arguments have been variously put, and different points have been taken by different intelligences who have communicated with you. We do not deny that we have gradually led you up to the general idea which we have wished to convey, and we have, in so doing, avoided points of indifferent opinion which were not essential to our message, as well as points on which we know full well that your previous notions were rooted firm, and would clash with our knowledge. We have sought rather to develop the germs of truth which we discovered than to come into contact with the singularities of opinion which exist. To this end we have seized upon points of contact, and have made much of them, while we have not dwelt on disputed and unimportant points, and have avoided discussing matters that do not lie in our path. Hereafter many points that at present are slurred over, or avoided, will be taken up. But when you have sought information on points whereon we knew your opinion to be erroneous and untenable for long, we have not scrupled to enlighten you. We can see well when the drift of thought is carrying you away from old moor in places which no longer afford safe anchorage for your spirit, and, seeing this, we have preferred to pilot you rather than to allow you to drop down the stream at the mercy of wind and current, and at risk of shipwreck. We have loosened the ropes, one by one, gently and gradually, and we have charged ourselves with the mission of landing you in safer and surer harborage. Had we tightened the moorings, the old ropes would have broken, and your spirit would have been tossed helpless on a stormy sea of doubt and difficulty, with no pilot at the helm, and no port in view, at the mercy of wind and wave, and with scant prospect of rescue. Do not blame us that we have chosen to anticipate the inevitable, and to smooth the rougher passage. We could not prevent, we may and can assist. We would not, if we could, have added to the chains which would bind your spirit to the dead past. We will, if you cooperate with us, enable it to rise superior to the storm, and to emerge with a new and living faith, on a calmer and more open sea, ready to cross what yet remains between the probation of earth and the haven of peace. In this endeavor we have studiously guarded ourselves from inflicting on you any rude shocks. We have not misled you on any point. We have never deceived you in aught. Scrupulous exactness has characterized all our statements to you. But we have preferred to take the ideas which we found in your mind, and to enlarge and develop them. We have fostered, directed, instilled newer and truer views, but we have in no point falsified, distorted, or misled. Nor is there actually any divergence in the teachings of those who have spoken to you. Any apparent discrepancy is referable to difficulties of communication, to the varying influence of your mind, to the state of your bodily health, to the novelty of the work to some, and especially to your own circumscribed views. We cannot teach you what you cannot receive. We can only dimly symbolize truths which one day your unclouded eye will see in their full splendor. We cannot speak with clearness when the spirit of our medium is troubled, when his body is racked with pain, or his mental state is vitiated by disease. Nay, even a lowering atmosphere, or electric disturbance, or the neighborhood of unsympathetic and unfavorable human influences, may color a communication, or prevent it from being clear and complete. Hence the various discrepancies which your minute gaze has detected. They are small enough and few enough, and they will all vanish when the difficulties are removed. Then will you recognize the superior insight which has guided you in a time of no ordinary difficulty and peril. This was at page 71. Section 11. You complain that there is little change of the acceptance of such views as we have put forward. Of this you can know very little. The time is far nearer than you think when the old faith which has worn so long, and which man has patched so clumsily, will be replaced by a higher and nobler one, one not antagonistic, but supplementary, in the pure gospel which Jesus preached shall find its counterpart again on an advanced plane of knowledge. For know, good friend, that no effort which, as this, is the plan of the Supreme, is entered on untimely, on with disregard of the correlation between God's gospel and man's wants. What comes to you from us is coming to others too. This is but one among many branches of one great plan. It will go on gradually and spread steadily among the children of faith who are fitted to receive it. The Master has so willed it. His time is not yours, nor is our vision circumscribed as yours. In due time the knowledge which we come to spread will be known among men. Meantime, progressive souls are being educated, precious seed is being sown, and the reaping and garnering shall come in their course. For that you and we alike must wait. If you will now think carefully over what has been said, you will see that the nature of the case precludes more than presumptive proof being given of the validity of our claims. We say again, that God forces blessings on none. He offers, the responsibility of acceptance or refusal rests with you. The internal evidence will be admitted by you and by all to whom we are now concerned to address ourselves. None but those who are hopelessly involved in the meshes of the shallowest bigotry, who are bound by the fetters of a conventional theology, and shackled by an iron dogmatism, will refuse to acknowledge the internal evidence of a divine origin in the creed which we put forward. With such as we have enumerated, the dogmatist, the bigot, the narrow-minded, the wise in their own conceit, we have no dealings. Nay, we do not even speak to those who find in the faith which has become ingrained in their very souls a sure and sufficient guide. In God's name let them cling to it. Hereafter their time of progress will come. It is not yet. To you, and to those who have advanced far enough to think with you, we need not further prove that we are not of diabolic origin or intent. If you will further consider the views which we have put forward with respect to inspiration, you will see that we claim for our teaching that it is just one of those rungs in the ladder of progressive knowledge of God which mankind has been gradually mounting, from the time when man framed for himself a God like himself, to the present, when you are slowly learning that to attribute human infirmities and passions to the Supreme is not to do him honor. Our revelation is in no respect different from that which has preceded, save that it is a step in advance, even as each development of human knowledge has been. Our knowledge flows from the same source, and is made known through similar channels. They are now, as then, human, fallible, and at times wrong. It must be so, as long as God reveals himself through human agencies. If you will further recollect the standpoint we have selected, you will see that in place of blind faith, which accepts traditional teaching the old, merely because it is old we appeal to your reason, and in place of credulity we demand rational, intelligent investigation and acceptance grounded on conviction. So far from desiring you to accept what we tell you simply because we are spirit messengers than you merely because it is new, we ask you to weigh in the scales of reason, to ponder in the light of intellect, to reject if you be not satisfied, in no case to assent or to act until conviction has been thoroughly established. This was at page 72, section 11. So that not only is the matter of spirit greed eminently conformable to right reason, but the grounds on which we ask you to accept it are those which a rational and logical mind will be most disposed to accept. God forbid that we should even seem to hurry any man into antagonism, real or fancied, with a creed which has for 1800 years and more been adorned by the lives of many myriads of earnest and progressive, as well as earnest though mistaken souls. The fact that it has long endured entitles it to the reverence due to antiquity, though with our extended view we can see that it also makes it needful that some of its provisions, admirably suited as they were for a less advanced generation, should now fitly be enlarged and spiritualized. At any rate, we would not disturb its reign with violent revolution. We would refine and infuse new life, we would not dethrone and humble in the dust. As the Savior told, in the accents of a life of loving and self-sacrificing purity, the story of a nobler faith than that which Sinai had revealed in accents of thunder, so we take up the divine story at a later day, and proclaim for a world's acceptance a creed more fitted to its advanced capacities, more suited to its later wants. it will reject it. Well, then, we at least have offered it, and to those who will surely grasp at it, its blessed influence shall seem the brighter from the contrast. It is long, frequently, between the first promulgation of a truth and its final acceptance. The seed time must precede the crop, and the rain and the frost and the cheerless wintertide may seem to be long drawn out, but the sun bursts forth at length, and the crop springs up, and the glad summer comes with the reaping and housing of the fruit. The day of preparation may be long, the night during which the sower waits may be weary, but the harvest surely comes. You cannot retard it, you may aid in reaping it, you may even assist in sowing the seed, but in spite of man's opposition, whether he aids or not, God's work will be done. It is to the individual alone that acceptance or rejection of the divine message matters materially. A soul is advanced or retarded in the life of progress, and the angels rejoice or mourn over the issue. That is all. You inquire from us what position we assign Jesus the Christ. We are not careful to enter into curious comparisons between different teachers who, in different ages, have been sent from God. The time is not yet come for that, but this we know, that no spirit more pure, more godlike, more noble, more blessing and more blessed, ever descended to find a home on your earth. None more worthily earned by a life of self-sacrificing love the adoring reverence and devotion to mankind. None bestowed more blessings on humanity, none wrought a greater work for God. It is not necessary that we should enter into curious comparisons between God's great teachers. Rather would we give to all the meed of praise that is their due, and hold up the example of self-denial, self-sacrifice, and love to the imitation of a generation which sadly needs such a pattern. Had men devoted their energies to the imitation of the simplicity and sincerity, the loving toil and earnest purpose, the self-sacrifice and purity of thought and life which elevated and distinguished the Christ, they had wrangled less of his nature, and had wasted fewer words upon useless metaphysical sophistries. Those of your theologians who dwelt in the days of darkness, and who have left to you an accursed heritage in their idle and foolish speculations, would have turned their minds into a more useful channel, and have been a blessing instead of a curse to mankind. Men would not have derogated from the honor due to the great God alone, but would have accepted, as Jesus intended, the simple gospel that he preached. But instead of this they have elaborated an anthropomorphic theology which has led them to wander further and further from the simplicity of his teaching, which has turned his name and creed into a battleground of sects, and has resulted in a parody on his teachings, a sight on which his pure spirit looks with sorrow and pity. This was at page 73. Section 11. Friend, you must discriminate between God's truth and man's glosses. We do not dishonor the Lord Jesus before whose exalted majesty we bow by refusing to acquiesce in a fiction which he would disown, and which man has forced upon his name. No, assuredly, but they who from a strict adherence to the literal text of Scripture, a text which they have not understood, and the spirit of which they have never grasped, have dishonored the great Father of him, and of all alike, and have impiously, albeit ignorantly, derogated from the honor due to the Supreme alone. Not we, but they dishonor God, not we, but they, though they have the prescription of long usage, though their words be colored by extracts from writings which they have decided to be divine, and though in those writings there be found words which pronounce a curse on any who may disagree with what is stated there. We do not regard such curses save with pity. We do not labor to upset belief when it is a harmless error, but we can lend no countenance to views that dishonor God, and retard a soul's progress. The attributing to a man of divine honor, to the exclusion in very many cases of personal honor and love for the Great Father, is a mischievous error which derogates from the duty of man to his God. The holding of a narrow, cold, dogmatic creed, in all its rigid, lifeless literalism, cramps the soul, dwarfs its spirituality, clogs its progress, and stunts its growth. The letter, says your Scripture, the letter killeth, but the Spirit giveth life. Hence we denounce such views of God as are contained in the fable of a material hell, and we proclaim to you purer and more rational ideas than are contained in the orthodox notions of atonement and vicarious sacrifice. We proclaim to you a spiritualized religion. We call you from the dead formalism, the lifeless, loveless literalism of the past, to a religion of spiritualized truth, to the lovely symbolism of angel teaching, to the higher planes of spirit, where the material finds no place, and the formal dogmatism of the past is forever gone. We have spoken to you with care, and with a due sense of the importance of what we say. Dwell on it with care. Ponder it with single desire for truth, and seek the divine aid ministered to all who pray for it. Plus Imperator. This was at page 74. Section 12. I am reluctant to publish what is so private in its nature and bearings, but I am constrained to do so, and my justification is that what was the experience of one may be the experience of many, and the history of my mental and spiritual struggles may be helpful to others who are passing through a similar phase. After an interval of some days, during which I received no communication on the subject of the religious teaching of spirits, I requested permission to state further objections which pressed strongly on my mind. As I recall my state, I was perplexed and startled by what had been said. I was unable to accept what was so new, and the great point that weighed with me was that of spirit identity. It seemed in my then state that I must have complete proof of the earth identity of the communicating spirit before I could accept the statements made. I believed such direct demonstration to be procurable, and I was distressed that it was not given. I did not know then, July, 1873, as I do now, that the evidence of conviction is what alone is to be had, and that no cut and dried plans such as I propounded would really have carried with it the conviction I imagined. Moreover, I was distressed by the feeling that much that passed current for spirit communication was silly and frivolous, if not mischievous. I compared the teaching of the Christian moralists with spirit teaching very much to the disadvantage of the latter. I also considered that there was very wide divergence between teachings given by spirits, and that all sorts of opinions were professed. Most of these I disliked personally, and I did not believe that they benefited the people who received them. I fancied that many such were enthusiasts and fanatics, and was repelled by the idea. Neither from internal nor external evidence was I greatly attracted, and the objections that I put at that time were directed to the points above noticed. They related principally to evidence about identity, to what I thought would be the probable dealings of God with mankind, and to the general character and outcome of spiritualism. The next answer made to me was as follows: Friend, we are pleased to converse with you again, and if it be impossible for us to answer all your queries, and to solve all your problems, we can at least rectify some errors into which you have fallen as to the dealings of God with man, and the tendency of the mission which we have in charge. The root of your error seems to lie in a false conception of God and of his dealings with mankind. Surely the page of human history bears upon it the story of one uniformly progressive revelation of one and the same God. The attempts of men to realize and picture to themselves the God whom they ignorantly worship have led to the strangest and most fallacious notions as to his nature and operations. In the early days of man's history, the crude notion of a God inherent in his spiritual nature took shape as a fetish, which was alternately prayed to with reverence or cast aside with contumely, in proportion as the prayer was granted or delayed. Men knew not that the block before which they bowed was powerless, and that round them hovered ever the bands of spirit ministers who were ready to succor and defend them, and to bear to them answers to their reasonable prayers. They could grasp no more of God than that. The tangible, palpable image was to them the embodiment of their idea. Mark this. Of their idea of God, not of God himself, but of the crude conception which was the best idea they could frame. Drawing their information from their own dealings, they imagined for themselves certain rules of conduct by which they proceeded to judge the God whom they had created. They feigned for him human passions such as they found worthy of respect in their fellows. They credited him with some failings which were inseparable from humanity as they knew it. He was jealous of his honor, long-suffering and of tender pity, according as they who spoke of him imagined that he ought to be. He was, in short, a glorified man, a man endued with omnipotence, omniscience, and omnipresence. They feigned him such and made him act accordingly. Consequently, all the revelation of God is characteristic of the age in which it is given. It grows with human development, and is progressively proportioned to the development of human intellect and refinement, simply because the human medium becomes capable of being impressed with more accurate views of the deity in proportion as he has shaken himself free from his former fetters of ignorance, and has himself progressed towards light and knowledge. We have frequently said that God reveals himself as man can bear it. It must needs be so. He is revealed through a human medium, and can only be made known in such measure as the medium can receive the communication. It is impossible that knowledge of God should outstrip man's capacity. Were we now to tell you if we could of our more perfect theology, it would seem to you strange and unintelligible. We shall, by slow degrees, instill into your mind so much of truth as you can receive, and then you will see your present errors. But that is not yet. Indeed, since the conception which each frames for himself is to him his God, it cannot be that revelation can be in advance of capacity. It is in the nature of things impossible. Hence you see that when you credit God with motives and say, "This cannot be," God is acting here contrary to his nature. He cannot so act now, because he did not so act then. You are simply saying, "My idea of God is so and so, and I cannot at present get another one. According to what I believe, my God would not do so." And that is precisely what we say. You have made your God, and you have made him act as you see fit. By and by, as your mind expands either in your present state of being or in another, you will get fresh light, and then you will say, "Now I see that I was wrong. God is not what I fancied at all. How could I ever have entertained such notions?" This is very much the case with all progressive minds. To some, the time of development comes not in this life. They must wait for a newer light in a newer life. But to some there comes a flood of knowledge even in their present place of existence. The old grows flat and profitless. The soul craves for a newer and truer revelation, for something which shall be as the spirit among the dry bones, and shall give them a resurrection unto life. Well, you have had, or you are having, your revelation. Your mind, as some would say, has widened, and has pictured a God more in accordance with its advanced capacities. You have received from an eternal source the same whence all other divine knowledge flows down to man, a newer and richer revealing of the Supreme, others may say. Call it what you will. The two operations of revelation and comprehension, of knowledge and capacity, must be correlative. The knowledge does not come until there is capacity to receive it. Neither does the mind get higher revelation until it has so far advanced as to feel the want of it, and that for the simple reason that it is itself the agent through which comes the revelation of which it is the recipient. All your fancied theories about God have filtered down to you through human channels, the embodiments of human cravings after knowledge of him, the creation of minds that were undeveloped, whose wants were not your wants, whose God, or rather whose notions about God are not yours. You try hard to make the ideas fit in, but they will not fit in, because they are the produce of divers intelligences in divers degrees of development. This was at page 76. Section 12. Think. You say to us that we are not of God, because our ideas of him made known to you are not compatible with some notions which you have derived from certain of the books in your sacred records. Tell us which is the God with whom we are at variance in our ideal. Is it the God who walked in human form with Adam, and is fabled to have wreaked direful vengeance on the ignorant creatures who are said to have committed what you now see to be a very venial fault? Or, is it the God who commanded his faithful friend to sacrifice to him the only child of his love as an acceptable offering? Or is it the God who reigned over Israel as an earthly monarch, and whose care was feigned to be devoted to the enunciation of sanitary laws, or to the construction of a tabernacle, who went forth with the armies of Israel to battle, and issued bloodthirsty laws and regulations for the extirpation of innocent and unoffending peoples?